You spend lots of time optimizing your portfolio, researching positions, managing risk, and leveraging the power of compounding. So, here's a question you need to take seriously. What could poor sleep actually be costing you? We know that sleep deprivation can degrade your cognitive performance, decision quality, emotional regulation, and temperature is a key factor in determining quality sleep. Finally, the temperature regulation challenge has been solved by the ChiliPad 2.0, a water-based mattress topper. It actively controls your bed temperature from 55 to 115 degrees all night to get you into deep, restorative sleep faster and keep you there longer. It works on your existing mattress, so a new bed is not needed. Visit www.sleep.me/invest to get up to $255 off a ChiliPad 2.0. This special offer is available for InvestTalk listeners and only for a limited time. Order it today and get your 30-day sleep trial with free shipping and free returns. Go to www.sleep.me/invest and see why cool sleep is worth every cent.
This is InvestTalk from KPP Financial, helping investors make sense of the markets one day at a time. Here's your host, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. I'm your host, Luke Guerrero. It is Monday, the first day of the week. It is the first day of the month and the first day of the last month of this quarter. As you can imagine, time has moved pretty fast. We are well underway. We are almost halfway through the year, so we have no time to waste. So, before we talk about today's market performance and go over our show topics, why don't we tackle our first caller question now?
I was calling about Nike, NKE. See, that was down over 60%. I was just wondering if now would be a good time to get in on it. Wanted to know your thoughts. Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye.
Nike, ticker NKE, is one of the most well-known clothing brands probably on the planet. They are famous for their large athletic footwear division, their apparel division, Nike, Jordan brand, Converse. And they are in the midst of a turnaround. And that's because this has been one of the most painful drawdowns in probably the history of the large cap consumer space. I mean, Nike has lost roughly 70% from its all-time high of 165 and is trading near multi-year lows at around $46 per share. It is down 27.91% year to date. And so it has some upcoming earnings in June that I think are pretty critical to understanding what position they're in, because in their most recent earnings on March 31st, revenue was down 3% year over year. And that was a beat, revenue being down. So that's depressing. Net income was down 35% year over year. Gross margin was down 1.3%. They have been dramatically affected by tariffs as well. And so you're seeing analysts continue to downgrade this name. You're seeing the company itself guiding Q4 fiscal year 2026 revenue to negative 4% year over year. Wall Street was expecting plus 1.9. It's not all negative. I mean, the company does have authorization for an $18 billion buyback. They do have a 24-year dividend growth history. They do have a pretty solid yield right now, about 3.6% for 2026. And they have one of the most iconic athletic brands with genuine wholesale recovery in North America. And because of this drawdown, I mean, they're trading at pretty low valuation, 25 times price to forward-looking earnings. It's nearly the lowest it's been in the past 5 years, but there's a lot of negative. I mean, Greater China, their Chinese segment, guided down 20% in Q4, Converse down 35%. Their gross margins are compressing, a lot of which is due to tariffs. They are on the path of an 18-month turnaround story with no visible revenue inflection And so, you know, there's a reason it is one of the most hated great brands in the market, especially from investors, especially given what's happened over the past couple years. And so with no end in sight to this drawdown, even though it's at multi-year lows, I don't see any reason to enter here. That is Nike, ticker NKE. Thanks for the call. Well, we had a great show for you on Friday. We looked into DeepSeek's permanent price cuts and talked about what AI commoditization means for tech investors. We also answered a question on Eli Lilly and Company. So if you missed that episode, feel free to go check it out. And remember, the best way to never miss a show is to follow InvestTalk wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's talk about today, where our main focus point will be how to invest in volatile markets without panic, because investors are being told to stay calm, but markets today are reacting to more than earnings and interest rates, supply chains, tariffs, geopolitical conflicts, shipping disruptions. They are now directly impacting portfolios. So how do you invest without making emotional decisions? Also, we'll touch on the big three IPOs this year and whether or not the market really can handle all of them. That's Anthropic, SpaceX, and OpenAI. We'll also give an update on the Iran situation as new clashes sent oil prices higher and bond yields higher as well. Should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about private credit. We also have some voice bank calls ready to play, including one on Tenet Healthcare Corporation, another on the Hartford Insurance Group, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. We're headed into a break. It is our first break, and it is a quick one. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, give me a call now at 888-99-CHART. When we come back, we'll talk about today's market activity.
This is InvestTalk, now closing in on 63 million downloads. And Luke Guerrero is here taking your questions live. 888-99-CHART.
On to the market today, where U.S. stocks finished mixed. The S&P and NASDAQ setting yet another round of fresh record closes, though only two sectors were higher and small caps underperformed. The NASDAQ gained 0.4%. The S&P added 0.25%. The Dow was roughly flat, while the Russell 2000 fell about 0.5 percentage point. Now, the session featured pretty familiar push and pull between oil and yields moving higher on cautious Middle East updates and AI enthusiasm continuing to underpin what has been a risk-on mood. Meanwhile, WTI crude surged 5.5%, bouncing off of last week's nearly 10% decline after Iran state media and Tehran, or said Tehran has suspended mediator-led talks and will fully block the Strait of Hormuz. But the afternoon tone improved a bit after Israel reported delayed planned strikes on Lebanon at Washington's request, and Trump said Iran talks are continuing. Now, the market remains, I would say, overall optimistic, and what they hope for is an eventual resolution despite the ongoing setbacks. Treasury yields backed up 3 to 4 basis points at the short end with the curve flattening. Now, the rotation into software was probably the standout story under the surface. The iShares software ETF has now rallied roughly 16% over the past three sessions and has outperformed semis for four straight sessions, a dramatic reversal for a space that was one of the market's biggest punching bags just a few weeks ago. Large cap semis and memory also rallied on the day, with NVIDIA and Microsoft leading the Mag 7. NVIDIA's Computex announcement included a new RTX Spark chip for the first personal laptops designed to run AI agents. Anthropic confidentially filed for an IPO, and Intel is planning to ship a new AI chip by year-end designed to accelerate tasks. The M&A headline space was pretty busy today. Berkshire Hathaway acquiring Taylor Morrison for $72.50 a share in an $8.5 billion deal. And Barry Diller's People confirmed an offer to acquire MGM for $48.30 in cash. Diving into sectors, airlines, cruise lines, banks, autos, housing-linked, retail, apparel, defense, and building materials all underperformed on the day, while energy, home builders, casinos, and tech hardware fared very well. On the data front, ISM manufacturing beat expectations and came in at its highest level since May 2022. Prices paid ticked lower, though remained elevated and employment improved, but stayed in contraction territory while construction spending also beat. The dollar gained 0.3%, gold fell nearly 2%, and silver edged a bit lower. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, JOLTS job openings, the highlight on tomorrow's calendar. This week, building towards Wednesday's ISM services and Beige Book and Friday's May employment report. All right, let's go with a YouTube question and take a look at, let's see, what are we going to do here? Yeah, this question right here. It says, Games Workshop, ticker GMWKF, GMWKSYADR, looks like a great revenue on licensing strategy, although it is very illiquid. Is the illiquidity enough to deter one from making it a position in a growth portfolio? Thanks for answering. All right, let's take a look at this. This is Games Workshop, GMWKF is the ticker. And, you know, I think Games Workshop, right, is probably a pretty fascinating company, and most people have never heard of it. So what they do is they design, manufacture, and sell miniature wargaming figures, as well as tabletop games. They have two segments, their core, which is their miniatures, paints, and accessories, and their licensing. So their video games, their TV, film, merchandising, and publishing. Their core revenue is about 625 million pound sterling. Their licensing revenue is around at least 30 million pound sterling. And the business is really good because margins are crazy, right? Gross margins are 65 to 70%. They design plastic miniatures and manufacture them pretty cheaply. And the recurring revenue is built into the model. Their new additions, their rule books, their expansions, their paints, their accessories, they create an ongoing spending cycle, and they have pretty much no competition. There's no real competitor at scale in tabletop miniature wargaming. But with all this being said, what about their illiquidity? Because this is the key issue. How liquid are we talking? Well, GMWKF, their ordinary shares, they trade over the counter. They are extremely thin. Some days they share only if, or rather they trade only a few hundred shares a day. Let's take a look at GWSKY. Well, GWSKY, or GWKSY, that is, slightly better, but still pretty low volume. The primary listing on the London Stock Exchange is kind of where the real liquidity lives, but U.S. investors need international brokerage access. Now, one other thing here, in terms of their ADRs, it still hasn't been trading, or it's been trading for just over a year now, and volume's still pretty thin. I mean, it's an $8 billion market cap company that has very thin volume. You're going to get wide bid-ask spreads. You could lose 1% to 3% just on the spread entering and exiting a position. You're going to get slippage on large orders. So if you try to buy or sell, I don't know, 50,000 worth, that's going to move the price against you. And the biggest problem is when you have liquidity like this, rather illiquidity, you can't really exit quickly if you need to. And so if you are going to buy into this name, smaller position sizes, limit orders are essential. You never want to use a market order on an OTC name that is this thin. For a significant position, which is, yeah, it's a real concern, 5% of your portfolio, you can't really efficiently rebalance, trim, or exit OTC positions without getting hurt on the spread. And so the bottom line is, right, it is a high quality business, but, you know, it's in spite of its brilliance and its licensing strategy, which is essentially free revenue on IP they already own, the liquidity is, it's a legitimate concern. I wouldn't say it's a deal breaker, especially if you're working on smaller sizes. Obviously, the best play is to get, you know, an international access and just buy their main line and JAW. But if you have to choose between the two of these, certainly the GWKSY, because there's a bit better liquidity, would be the way to go. Thanks for watching. Now, I briefly mentioned it on Friday, but we are doing yet another InvestTalk Wealth webinar this month, and it's going to be focusing on how to structure income portfolios. We're going to be going beyond the yield to decipher all of your income needs, as well as the options that you have. As always, our wealth webinars are free, but you must register at investtalk.com to participate. We're excited for it. Can't wait to see you there. Headed into a break. Still to come, our main focus point. And as always, more answers to your burning in finance and investment questions. So give me a call. Answer or question. Ask it live, rather. You know the number. 888-99-CHART.
You've got finance and investment questions, and the InvestTalk phone lines never close. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Looks like we got our first live call. Sammy from San Francisco, listening on AM 1220 in the Bay Area. Looks like you got a question about Intuit. Do you own it? Are you looking to buy it?
I'm actually looking to buy it. And since I have you here online, so it'll be good to hear your comments around the general sector as a whole. Software, as you mentioned, has, you know, been doing better or has improved the last few days. What's your take on that? But of course, I want to hear your thoughts on Intuit first.
Sure. Let's take a look at Intuit. Intuit is, of course, the company that is famous for TurboTax, QuickBooks, Credit Karma, MailChimp. They are a Silicon Valley-based financial technology platform. So they offer both enterprise solutions to businesses as well as customers. Now, recently, I think it was on May 20th-ish, they had a beat and a raise with guidance and announced shortly thereafter about a 17% workforce reduction. Now, the stock dropped 11% after hours on the layoff news, but it's recovered quite a bit. It's up 6.71% today, but still well below where it was at the beginning of the year when it was trading around 670, 650 per share, now trading at about 353. I mean, it's drawn down about 46.60%. year to date, and that's in spite of revenue being up 10.4% year over year in their most recent earnings. You know, they beat there. They had earnings per share, non-GAAP earnings per share, beat by about 2.6%. So what's going on here? Well, you know, it's recovered a bit. It's recovered a bit in the past 2 months. It's only down 13%, but it's still trading at a valuation that is really low considering where it's been over the past 5 years. I mean, it was once trading as high as 58 times price to forward-looking earnings, trading about 12 times price to forward-looking earnings. They did have a threat a while back with IRS direct file. You know, that was shut down by the Trump administration. Is that permanent? Is that something that's going to come back? I would say it's still a bit looming here. You know, they do have the benefit of a combination of low valuation with solid growth in a time where the sector itself has just been absolutely beaten down. Now, it's not all positive, right? They did only grow TurboTax, that is, about 7% in peak tax season. That was below expectations. That was in spite of IRS direct file kind of being kicked to the curb. And so, you know, with this overall, I would say still dramatic recovery from April fear lows. You know, it went from 390 to about 485 in 1 month as the market was re-rating, and then it fell back down. I don't see it really as a company that's in distress. I think that amongst software as a whole, though, Intuit is in a space that is probably at the most threat from the consumer side. Right, QuickBooks is something that is used really by small businesses. And this is tying to your larger question of, you know, what is going on with the software space? I said when the drawdowns were happening that I thought a lot of software was beaten down for no reason. I think there has been a lot of fear that some of these institutional companies, your Microsofts, your Salesforces, were beaten down because people thought that with the advances in quote-unquote AI, there were a lot of big replacements. Now, for those types of companies, the Microsofts and the Salesforces, I said, you know, the consumer revenue, small business revenue, this is a drop in the bucket compared to the Fortune 500 companies that are using these services. And these Fortune 500 companies, no CTO, Chief Technology Officer, is going to bank their entire career on switching from an established Salesforce type business to some vibe coded, internally managed system. It's just not going to happen. There is no efficiency at scale there. But for Intuit, a lot of their businesses, a lot of their business lines really cater to consumers and small business, QuickBooks, TurboTax, Credit Karma. And so for them, I think there is a legitimate concern that some of these solutions from AI can supersede their existing business lines. I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing, you know, TurboTax have such low growth in 2026. And so I would separate Intuit from a lot of these other software companies. If I'm being frank, I think that software as a whole has been beaten down. I think that Intuit being beaten down, though, is a bit more reasonable. And I think we're still trying to figure out, or rather, it's still trying to figure out where it's going to go from here. That is ticker INTU, Intuit. Thanks for the call. Well, folks, when we come back from the break, we got yet another great focus point for you all. It's going to be about not panicking and not investing emotionally. And because it is our Monday focus point, as we typically do with our Monday focus points, we expand on this topic in our new Deeper Focus video series. So look for that to drop on Tuesday or Wednesday of this week over on our YouTube channel. If you haven't been there yet, I encourage you to check it out. Head over to YouTube and search Invest Talk with two T's. On the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this story. Is the 10-year treasury yield about to break out? What rising rates means for bonds and borrowing. Stop guessing with supplements. Most of us take vitamins blindly, wasting time and money. Your body is unique, and it deserves better. Introducing True Diagnostic, an easy at-home health test. With a quick finger prick, True Diagnostic uses advanced epigenetic testing to analyze over 1 million data points and measure up to 180 biomarkers. You will receive clear digital results with a personalized 90-day actionable plan to improve health, boost energy, and slow down your aging process. There is absolutely no guesswork and no generic advice. Right now, my listeners can get 20% off at truediagnostic.com using code INVEST20 at checkout. That's truediagnostic.com and use code INVEST20 for 20% off today. Choose True Age, True Health, or the Combo Kit as a one-time purchase or subscription. True Diagnostic, spelled TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Use code INVEST20 for 20% off today. Treasury yields are edging higher as U.S.-Iran military exchanges rattle markets, and inflation expectations climb, creating a challenging environment for fixed-income investors. We decode what's driving yield movement right now and whether bond investors should be repositioning for a higher-for-longer world. That's tomorrow. For now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
At KPP Financial, accountability means more than advice. It means we invest alongside you. Through our parallel investing approach, when we recommend an investment for clients, one or more KPP principals invest their own capital at the same time. Same day, same price, same percentage. If your portfolio moves, ours does too. That is alignment. That is transparency. That is the KPP difference. Visit investtalk.com to get your free portfolio review.
Get ready for an all-new InvestTalk Wealth webinar, Beyond the Yield, How to Invest for Your Income Needs. Tuesday, June 30th, noon to 1 Pacific Time. Learn more and register now at investtalk.com.
So we're about 3 months into the situation in the Middle East, and stay calm has been the most overused and probably least useful piece of advice that is proliferating amongst financial media. Everyone knows you are supposed to stay calm. Nobody really knows how. And the problem isn't that investors lack composure. It's that the source of volatility, the sources have changed in ways that make traditional investment frameworks feel a bit inadequate. And, you know, we're no longer dealing with a market driven primarily by earnings and interest rates. This market is being driven simultaneously by a Middle East war, a Strait of Hormuz blockade, a potential peace deal that might or not hold and seem to devolve a little bit today, oil that swings 5% in a single session, inflation reaccelerating to 3.8%, a new Fed chair whose independence is already being tested, tariff policy that shifts by tweet. And, by the way, an AI-driven sector rotation, a $75 billion SpaceX IPO in 10 days, consumer sentiment at an all-time low, and a stock market that keeps hitting record highs despite all of it. When 9 of 11 S&P sectors close in the red, but the index still rises because tech and energy carry the day, telling someone to stay calm is really missing the point. Now, the first thing to internalize is that volatility itself isn't the risk. The risk is what you do in response to the volatility. We covered the behavioral finance data a week ago, talked about Oxford risk estimates, emotional investing costs roughly 3% per year in lost returns. CFA Institute analyzed the 10 worst single day drops in history and found that in 7 out of 10 cases, the market was higher within 10 trading days after that. The investors who sold during the March sell-off funded the profits of the hedge funds that bought $86 billion at the bottom, and the S&P has since rallied to all-time highs. The volatility wasn't the problem, the reaction to the volatility was. But acknowledging that, especially in hindsight, is different from having a framework for dealing with it. So let me give you one that actually is practical in the current environment. First, separate the signal from the noise by identifying which risks are priced and which ones aren't. Oil at 92 is priced. The market knows about Hormuz. It knows about the ceasefire fragility. It knows Chevron's CEO said buffers are depleting. And what isn't fully priced is the timeline for infrastructure repair. ADNOC's CEO said full Hormuz flows won't return until Q1 or Q2 of next year, even with a deal. The gap between what the market expects, quick resolution, and what the operators are saying, months to years of disruptions, is where the unpriced risk sits. If you're going to act on anything, act on the gap between market expectations and operator reality. Second, build a portfolio that doesn't depend on a single scenario being right. The biggest mistake investors make during geopolitical crises is concentrating their portfolio around their best guess about the outcome. If you think the war ends and go all in on rate-sensitive growth stocks, you can and might and probably will get crushed if the ceasefire collapses. If you think the war drags on and loads up on energy, you get whipsawed on every peace headline. The correct approach is to own assets that perform in different scenarios and accept that some part of your portfolio will always be underperforming. That's not a failure. That is quite literally what diversification is. It is diversification working as designed. Now, in the current environment, that means maintaining core equity exposure through broad index funds, keeping 5 to 10% in energy and commodities as an inflation and geopolitical edge, holding short duration bonds or money markets for the income and optionality that provides, or rather that is provided at 3.5 to 4%. Maintaining a 5 to 10% gold allocation as a long-term debasement hedge that has recently started working again as peace hopes push the dollar lower, and having enough cash to act on opportunities without having to sell at the wrong time. Third, dollar cost averaging is your friend. It removes timing decisions entirely. The single most effective strategy during volatile markets is also the most boring. That's how this thing works, guys. Invest a fixed amount of regular intervals, regardless of what's happening. You buy more shares when prices are low and fewer when they're high. It mechanically produces the opposite behavior of what emotional investors do, and it eliminates the question, is now a good time to invest? Because the answer is always yes if you're investing consistently over years, not months, and have a long-term lens. Fourth, rebalance. Don't react. If your target allocation is 60% equities, 30% bonds, 10% alts, and the equity rally has pushed stocks to 68%, the correct move is to trim equities and add bonds, not because you're bearish on stocks, but because you're managing risk. Rebalancing forces you to sell high and buy low systematically. It is the only free lunch in investing, and it works precisely because it requires you to move against the market's momentum. Fifth, extend your measurement period. Don't check your portfolio daily, guys. The worst thing that has happened is everybody trading on Robinhood off their phone. And when you do it during a crisis, it's only going to give you more anxiety and increase the probability of making an emotional-driven trade. The difference between checking daily and checking monthly can literally be the difference between panic selling at the bottom and holding through recovery. The S&P 500 has delivered positive returns in roughly 70% of calendar years since 1945. The average intra-year decline is about 14%, even in years that end positive. If you measure performance over days, you will always find a reason to panic. If you measure it over years, you'll almost always find a reason to stay invested. And that's the thing here. People always say investing is easy. Look at what the S&P does over the long term. That is true. But the hardest thing is actually holding it. The market right now, it's sending contradictory signals. Record highs alongside record low consumer sentiment. Soaring AI earnings alongside oil-driven inflation. Peace optimism alongside continued Hormuz closure. That dissonance, it's uncomfortable. And the human instinct is to resolve it by making a big move in one direction. Resist that instinct. The market can hold contradictions far longer than most investors can hold their nerve. Your job isn't to resolve the contradiction, it's to build a portfolio that survives it and to let compounding do the rest. All right, let's keep things moving and take a look at this YouTube question on ticker RNMBY. It says, what do you think of RNMBY? I want to buy this stock because it has strong growth numbers. Another reason is the long-term trend seems strong. With Germany building in military backup, it seems like it will have steady profits for years to come. All right, let's take a look at this name. It is not coming up. It is Ryan Mattel AG, and this is an unsponsored ADR. Going back to 2021, performance has been very, very strong relative to the U.S. market. I mean, in three of the past four years, they have returned over 100%. In 2025, it was a 188%. And I think your thesis is generally right. This is one of the best secular growth stories in global defense. But the stock has pulled back pretty hard from all-time highs. Year-to-date, they're down 23%. In the past 52 weeks, they're down roughly 35%. Now, the real story here is their order backlog. 73 billion euros as of March 2026. That's up 56 billion a year ago. Their backup coverage is roughly 97% for full year 2026 revenue guidance. I mean, this year is essentially sold out. Their total backlog is projected to reach 135 billion euros by year end 2026, so nearly doubling from current levels. I mean, that's roughly 5.5 years of revenue visibility at their current run rate. And their order intake is expected to exceed 20 billion. And there are structural tailwinds here. I mean, Germany has not yet fully executed on its promised defense spending surge, so the money is committed, but hasn't all flowed yet. The country said they're targeting 162 billion in a defense budget for 2029. European NATO members projected to spend 1 trillion cumulatively by 2030. And the Iran war has, in a lot of ways, only worked to accelerate the urgency of European rearmament with, of course, the Russian invasion in 2022 of Ukraine doing that as well. And so I mentioned a lot of goods, right? There are downsides to this thing. I mean, momentum doesn't look great, especially coming off surging in 2022 to 2024. Q1 revenue missed on both earnings per share and revenue estimates. The OTC liquidity issue is also there as well. I mean, it's got decent volume, but certainly not great volume. Not as bad as the other name that we looked at. You know, overall, I would say it is, for good reason, one of Europe's premier defense companies. And it's trading at a 40% discount to its 52-week high. I like the name. You know, just keep in mind it's thinly traded. So just like we said before, use limit orders. Understand that the, you know, the Iran ceasefire is creating a bit of a near-term sentiment headwind. Let's see how that develops this week. And it's not cheap. At 38 times forward price earnings, stock's not cheap even after this pullback. So if you have a really strong conviction, this is a good way to play that conviction, but understand the downsides, primarily liquidity, and that, you know, we're priced pretty high right now at about 28 times price to forward-looking earnings. Thanks for checking out our videos. I hope you enjoy them. That is Invest Talk. I'm Lou Guerrero. We have one goal here, and that goal does not change. Each and every day, we try and bring you the stories that matter and educate you in order to help you achieve your financial goals, in order to help you achieve financial freedom. Now, this is our final break, which means we only got a little bit of time left today. But the good news is we at Invest Talk are here 5 days a week. You only got a little bit of time left to get your question in. So pick up that phone and dial 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Millions of downloads have proved there's value in every InvestTalk podcast. Call anytime, 24/7, InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
SpaceX is expected to price its IPO on June 11th and begin trading on the NASDAQ on June 12th under the ticker SPCX. Now, the company is targeting a $1.75 trillion valuation and a $75 billion raise, more than 2.5 times the previous record set by Saudi Aramco in 2019. Goldman Sachs is what's called the lead left bank. They're the lead book runner with Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan, rounding out the syndicate. In an unusual move, SpaceX is allocating roughly 30% of their shares directly to retail brokerage platforms through Robinhood, through Fidelity, and through Schwab, the largest direct-to-retail carve-out any IPO of this size has ever extended. Now, Anthropic filed draft IPO paperwork today. OpenAI is expected to follow soon. The two AI labs are rumored to be seeking as much as $60 billion with a B apiece. Together, the three giga IPOs could add as much as $4 trillion to the market value of listed American companies in a matter of months. The Economist raised the right question. How does the stock market handle this? The answer is that America's $79 trillion equity market is deep enough to absorb the initial offerings, but the long-term digestion is where the problems could emerge. Index inclusion is the immediate mechanical question. NASDAQ has shortened its seasoning period to 15 trading days. FTSE Russell has slashed it to 5. Most indices weight firms by free float, the shares actually available for public trading, not total market cap. SpaceX's initial free float will be just the $75 billion it issues, meaning its initial weight in the S&P would be around 10 basis points. But over time, as lockups expire and insiders sell, the free float grows and index weight increases, forcing tracker funds to buy progressively more. The historical data on IPO performance should give pause. Of IPOs listed between 1980 and 2024, the average IPO stock returned 20 percentage points less than the broader market over the 3 years following its first trading day. This is what I talk about all the time. Firms valued at over 40 times revenue underperformed by 58%. SpaceX would begin trading at over 90 times its $18.5 billion in 2025 revenue. The S1 filing revealed SpaceX posted a $4.9 billion net loss in 2025, despite that revenue driven by the massive capital requirements of the Starlink satellite constellation and XAI integration. Elon Musk's 42% stake comes with 85.1% voting power through a dual-class share structure that gives public shareholders essentially zero governance influence. Blockbuster IPOs have also historically coincided with market peaks. The last surge in listings, 2020, 2021, came just before a big bear market. Previous booms in the late 1990s and before 2008 preceded major slumps. All three giga IPO companies are closely associated with AI, and America's 10 biggest AI-related firms already account for two-fifths of the S&P's value. If the AI thesis disappoints, this is what we call concentration risk, people, and it is enormous. For all of you, for all investors, the SpaceX Roadshow starts June 8th. The excitement, it's going to be intense. The retail allocation, it is going to be unprecedented. The temptation to buy on day one, it will be strong. But the data says patience pays. Most IPOs underperform. Valuations at 90 times revenue have rarely rewarded early buyers. And the $4 trillion in new market cap coming in market to the market represents a structural shift from the capital scarcity that's been driving share prices higher to a world where tech giants are raising capital rather than buying it back. That transition from buybacks to issuance could define the next phase of this market. Well, folks, that does it for another episode of Invest Talk. Justin and I and the entire team thank you for listening and encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. As you're well aware, you can get those at iTunes and Spotify. And while you're at it, we really would appreciate it if you left us a rate and review. Additionally, we have a YouTube channel where we have YouTube exclusive content, including our webinar series and our Deeper Focus video series. If you haven't checked it out yet, I encourage you to head over to YouTube and type in Invest Talk with two T's. Don't forget to subscribe to our channel and leave your questions in the comment section. Lastly, if today's show made you think about your financial circumstances, your investment, your retirement, whether or not you actually have a financial plan that works for you, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review. Justin and I speak with investors just like yourselves each and every day. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.